Told us it's supposed to be on its way today. We can see any evidence of it. I just want to deal this morning with verses 7 through 13 of chapter 7. It really deals with in the question that comes up. Our grace is grace. Is grace and law antithetical? Some people would say so. You know, we've heard a lot of talk over the years and discussion over the years in our country about the posting of the Ten Commandments in various places, in some monuments or replicas, I guess, of Ten Commandments that they put up in various places, especially around the state capitals of some of the states in that. Did you hear just this week that this came to the forefront again in Arkansas, of all places? Can imagine that, Arkansas, of all places. And the state capital, the Satanists got together because there's a replica of the Ten Commandments there. The Satanists and the atheists got together and they brought and unveiled a 10-foot statue of Satan, of their depiction of Satan. You know, it's a picture of a guy. Well, I won't even say it's a guy, but a picture of, supposed to be a human and a goat with a human body and a goat's head. And then behind it is the pentagram and blasphemies of all. He's got his, of course, the hands are up, but they have on either side of him, this statue, they have a boy and a girl, children, looking up to him with glee. They put that there because, well, there's a replica of the Ten Commandments, and they're saying that they're going to keep it there, and they're going to have a vigil over it, watch it, until they take that the Ten Commandments out, until they take it down. Why do people have a problem with that, with the Ten Commandments, though? What's that? I think that's a lot of it. And of course, the Ten Commandments represents what? Yeah. But it represents religion to them. See? And we're supposed to be exempt from that. So they have a problem with that. But they have more of a problem with the fact that it's the Ten Commandments, and that's a religious thing, that like there's something inherently wrong with such a thing. And in this regard, though, we come to a very important section in the seventh chapter of Romans. Paul says, what shall we say then? Is the law sin? May it never be. On the contrary, I would not have come to know sin except through the law. For I would have not known about coveting if the law had not said, you should not covet. But sin, taking opportunity through the commandment, produced in me coveting of every kind. For apart from the law, sin dead. I was once alive apart from the law, but when the commandment came, sin became alive and I died. And this commandment, which was to result in life, proved to result in death for me. For sin, taking an opportunity through the commandment, deceived me, and through it killed me. So then, the law is holy, and the commandment is holy and righteous and good. Therefore, did that which is good become a cause of death for me? May it never be. Rather, it was sin in order that it might be shown to be sin by effecting my death through that which is good, so that through the commandment sin would become utterly sinful. So let's unpack what Paul is saying. Because it does hinge on and it does deal with us today. It does deal with the idea of the Ten Commandments and the replicas that they have in them. But it deals with, is there something bad about law? Are grace and law antithetical? I agree with Brother Jack Cottrell when he states the main point of this whole section of Paul is to defend the integrity of God's law. Despite all the seemingly negative things said about it, the problem is not with law, but with sin. Sin, again personified as an opposing tyrant, uses its sinister power to abuse and exploit God's good law for its own negative purposes. Like the serpent in Genesis 3, 1 through 6, it distorts the law in a way that leads to sin and death, but this does not mean that the law itself is a bad thing. Indeed, Paul specifically declares that it is holy, righteous, and good, verse 12. What's Paul doing here? Paul, in these verses, is taking us on a journey, if you would. He is relating his own spiritual journey. Like some people would say today, his story. What he experienced through life. Because this is exactly what he says. And the reason why he does is because he knows that some will say, what should we say then? Well, Paul, what you're saying, if the law causes all this, the law's bad then. It's evil. It's wrong. And Paul says, is the law sin? May it never be. On the contrary, he says. And he takes us on that spiritual journey. He says, I would not have come to know sin except through the law. Now, as I said, Paul is taking us on a spiritual journey. We kind of talked about that this morning. The age of accountability. That's what Paul is talking about. It's representative at the time when he reached the age of accountability. And a lot of people, and we talked about that this morning, a lot of people have a problem with that. Did you know in the Hasidic community, Jewish community, and in the Orthodox Jewish community, they still have the bar mitzvah. And in fact, in a lot of Jewish homes, they're Orthodox, they have a bar mitzvah for the boy. What age does a bar mitzvah take place? 13. When a son reaches the age of 13, they have a party for him. And they call it the bar mitzvah. Well, what that bar mitzvah means in Hebrew, it means he's come of age. come of age to what? He's become an adult? No. No, he's just come to the point where he can begin to learn. But the bar mitzvah, the coming of age, means that the young man then becomes a son. Get this. A son of the commandment. We sang a song not too long ago this morning. Hear, O Israel, there is one God. Where does that come from? Deuteronomy chapter 6. Every Hebrew child, especially the boy, they are taught from the time that they can learn, from the time that they can hear, even when they're little, in the Orthodox and the Hasidic community, children learn that. And that is called the Shema. What we sing, beginning of that, Hear, O Israel, there is one God, that is known as the Shema. And every morning and evening, they hear that. They understand that. So at a bar mitzvah, when a young man becomes, at the age of 13, he comes of age. He becomes then a son of the commandment. Hear, O Israel, there is one God. And they begin to teach him what that entails. Well, Paul, when he says this, on the contrary, I would not have come to know sin except through the law. He's talking about that age of accountability. That age when he himself began to take on and accept personal responsibility. And when a young man goes to the bar mitzvah today, that's what it means. It doesn't mean, a lot of them think, well, it just means you're going to have a party. And boy, do they have a party when they come at 13, kind of like a birthday party. But it's their coming of age time. But it means, when they become a son of the commandment, it means they begin to accept responsibility for themselves. That they have to answer for themselves now, for what they do right and for what they do wrong. And more than that, it means that, and get this, and a lot of people think, well, bar mitzvah, you know, make fun of it and all that. Oh, do you have your bar mitzvah and that? Make fun of it. But it means, and the Jewish fathers, the Orthodox and the Hasidic fathers, they emphasized this to their sons. It means that their behavior has to take on a change. They take on more responsibility. They begin to mature. They begin to become young adult men. So when Paul is saying, he's taking us back to that period of time when he came to the age of accountability, when he came of age, when he became a son of the commandment, he accepted that responsibility now upon himself. And his behavior was to show forth a change. So again, Paul gives us another meganoita, may it never be. And isn't it interesting? Paul says, no. Law is not sin. It's not bad. As Brother Garris Reese says, it's not the law that arouses sinful passions. It is the sin. That is the devil trying to expand his dominion in the world that arouses the sinful desires. That's why in this passage here, law should not be capitalized. It has a wider reference than just the law of Moses. So Paul says here that he would really not understand sin without the law. And Paul is saying that goes for anyone else as well. So here we have a general truth. And then Paul gives us an example. We have a general truth. Without law, really understand sin. So Paul gives that general truth, and now he gives a specific example of this truth. Do you know what? When Paul says, on the contrary, I would not have come to know sin except through law. And then he gives the example. For I would not have known about coveting if the law had said, you shall not covet. Why do you suppose Paul cites this commandment? It's one of the Ten Commandments. Which one is it of the Ten Commandments? It's the last one. He doesn't say, without the law, I would not have known about, there's only one God, you should only worship him, don't take the Lord's name in vain, don't steal, don't murder, don't commit adultery. He didn't mention any of those things. He cites as his example the last one. Why would he do that? There's a purpose behind it. Why he chose that one. You ever wonder why? He chose that one and not some other one? The reason why he does, brothers and sisters, is because Paul knows that that last one, that last commandment that he gives, the first example, that's the root of sin. That's why he cites it. The word that is used there in the Greek, it means to have a strong desire, covet, to have a strong desire for. There's biblical basis for this. You look at James chapter 1, verses 14 to 15. What does it say? But each one is tempted when he is carried away and enticed by his own lust, by his own strong desire. Then when lust, that strong desire, has conceived, it gives birth to what? It gives birth to sin. And when sin is accomplished, it brings forth what? It brings forth death. But sin taking opportunity through the commandment produced in me coveting of every kind. For apart from the law, sin dead. Now the translators put is in there to make it sound good. But literally in the Greek it just says sin dead. And Paul says here, I once was alive apart from law. But when the commandment came, sin became alive, and I died. What's Paul talking about here? He's talking about that time. I agree with Brother Don DeWelt when he said this refers to the days of innocent childhood. Paul is saying here, there was a time when I was alive apart from the law. What Paul is saying there is he's talking about that age of accountability. I was alive before I knew there was a law. He's talking about that innocence of childhood. What he is saying here is, and this blows to smithereens the idea of total hereditary depravity. Because Paul is saying here that there is a state of a child, the spiritual state of the child is innocent. That's what he is saying. It's not spiritually dead yet. The last part of that verse in verse 9 refers to the fact that we all have a free will. But the potential is there for both good and evil. Paul says, I was alive apart from law, but when the commandment came, sin became alive and I died. What is he saying there? Paul said in Ephesians 2:1, and you were dead in your trespasses and sins. When did that happen? Now, I believe that it happens at a different age for different people. Doesn't happen all at the same time or at the same age. But there comes a time when it does happen. When is that? I think what Paul is saying is that when we understand that when we choose to sin or disobey God, we then become spiritually dead. And Paul says, before I came to that time period in my life, I was innocent. But then I understood law. I understood between what was right and wrong morally. And I understood that God put that in place. And once I did understand that, that's what Paul is saying here, I now have a choice. Do I do good? Or do I do wrong? And Paul says that that is a choice. If you look at Ephesians chapter 2, verse 5, Paul says, even when we were dead in our transgressions, our sins, made us alive together with Christ. By grace, you have been saved, he says. Elsewhere in Colossians 2:13, Paul says, when you were dead in your transgressions, your sins, and the uncircumcision of your flesh, he made you alive together with him, having forgiven us all our transgressions. He says there's a point where you become spiritually dead. But how do you become spiritually alive then? How do you become alive again? But see, what Paul is saying here in these verses, 7 through 13 here, is that the real culprit is sin, not law, but sin. And this goes all back to today and what's happening in our society. Because what they are teaching and what they want to teach, you see, and this is what many people refuse to see, they want to make law the culprit. Or we don't have enough, so let's make some more. They want to make law culprit, not sin. And Paul says, no. Sin is the real culprit, not law. Paul says, two other places I point you to, 2 Corinthians 11, verse 3, and 1 Timothy 2, verse 14. Now, in 2 Corinthians 11, 3, verse 3, Paul says, "But I am afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, your minds will be led astray from the simplicity and purity of devotion to Christ. From the simplicity and purity to Christ." Get that? But he's talking to Christians. "But I am afraid that as a serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, your minds will be led astray from the simplicity and purity to Christ." Many people sitting in churches today, many Christians out there today, their minds are being led astray from the simplicity and purity of Christ. We see that by some of the things that they're trying to promote and some of the things they're trying to teach. Did you know that now they're trying, but they're writing on, and they have come up with a term called queer theology. Queer theology. Meaning that, you see, they are trying to say that in the scriptures, there is justification. For different ways to think about sex. Queer theology. And that God promotes that. Homosexuality, transgender, you name it. And they're calling that queer theology. But you see, that's what Paul is saying there about that. Their minds are being led astray. Paul said in 1 Timothy, chapter 2, "There was not Adam was deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgressions." But yet then Adam was deceived because he gave in to his wife. But Eve was first deceived. But why? Because you see, her mind, the way she thought, was led astray. And she listened to Satan. And many out there are just like that today. Their minds are being led astray. And Paul says, Well, when the commandment came, sin became alive and I died. And this commandment, which was to result in life, proved to result in death for me. For sin, taking an opportunity through the commandment, deceived me. For the sin, literally, in the Greek, taking an opportunity through the commandment, deceived me, Satan. And through it, killed me. He's not saying literally killed him, but spiritually he became dead. Now, verses 12 and 13 are the definitive answer to that. And to verse 7. So then, the law is holy, he said, and the commandment is holy and righteous and good. I believe the reason why people have a problem with the replica of the Ten Commandments is why? Because it does represent morality. It does represent who stands behind law, and that is God. For what's the first commandment? Thou shalt have no other gods before me, for there is only one God. People have a problem with that. That's why they don't want that. That's why they don't want those things. Not because it just represents religion, but because of what they say. Now it's true, we are not under the law of Moses, under those things. We're in the new covenant, under grace. But every single one of those commandments, of the Ten Commandments, do they still stand today? Do they mean anything? Do they still have meaning for us as Christians? Do they still have meaning for people in the world? Yes, because of what they say. Just because we don't live under the old covenant, under the Old Testament, the old covenant now, does that obliterate, does that dissolve, take away what God said? Aren't those things still in effect? But there are people who don't like that and don't want them to still be in effect. So verse 12 and 13, the definitive answer to verse 7. And verse 13 contains two purpose clauses. And this is important to see. One you have at the beginning of the verse. Therefore, did that which is good become death for me? Did that which is good become death for me? Paul said, the law is holy and the commandment is holy and righteous and good. Why is it holy, righteous, and good? Just because it's law? No. Because of who stands behind the law. Who put it in place and who gave it in the first place? God. Because God is holy, righteous, and good. And what he gives is holy, righteous, and good. Rather, it was sin in order, here's the purpose clause, in order that it might be shown to be sin by effecting my death, spiritual death, through that which is good. The second purpose clause, so that through the commandment sin would become utterly sinful. What does he mean by that? Become utterly sinful? So that a person would truly understand that they can't keep the law perfectly, but they need something in place of that. That's God's grace. Utterly sinful, meaning that you can't keep the law perfectly. and no one can. But let us relate that this to today. I'll give you an illustration. Drug addicts. Now here in our wonderful city, in our area, they want to give. Not the drug. Maybe they'll even provide those. But they want to provide the needles so that those who do those things can shoot up and harm themselves. Let me ask you a question. Is it the needle that's bad? No. There are some, the mayor of London, want to outlaw all knives because there were some who had knives who were stabbing people. Wants to outlaw all knives. Ask you a question. Is the knife what's bad? Is the knife the wrong thing, the bad thing? Now let's come down to guns. Some want to outlaw guns. Is the gun the bad thing? Is the gun the one that kills a person? Is the knife the one who stabs a person, kills a person? That's what they want people to believe and think. The reason behind that, wanting to get rid of those things, because they want to say, those are the bad things. And that's where society has gotten things all wrong. And what Paul brings it back to. And there are those who want to say certain laws, bad. Well, there are some that are bad and shouldn't be. And we know a number of them. But there are some that aren't, but they want to get rid of those and saying that even the law is all the bad things. So let's make a stricter one. Yeah. But again, brothers and sisters, that's where society has got things all wrong. The bad thing is what? The one that chooses to do the wrong. The one who's doing the stabbing. The one that's giving them the needles to shoot up. And the ones that are doing that. The one that uses the gun to kill somebody. That's where they've got to get back to. And that's what they don't want to do. Because they want to blame it on an inanimate object. You see here that what Paul is saying, see, that people got to get back to the right way of thinking. And many people, their minds, it's like what Paul said in 2 Corinthians, their minds are being led astray. Satan's doing that. But people are allowing that. No. Sin is the problem. Not the law. Not law. Now it's true. If God had not revealed to us what is right and wrong, we wouldn't know that, would we? Some people say, well, that's what he should have done. But how would one really live that way? You see? Can't. May it never be. The problem is that of sin. That's the way people think. And again, society has gotten it all wrong. And they want that to filter into the church. And what Paul says, their minds are being led astray. So many out there, their minds are being led astray. So many are being led astray from the simplicity and purity of Christ and of what he teaches in this. But the answer still is, let's stand and we're going to sing, "For God so loved the world." That is the answer. But they don't want it. How odd. Don't you think that's odd? I do. But see, the answer. But so many don't want that.